I noticed that Arnold looked at Hoffa and smiled. "Okay, I'll bite," Marvin was grinning at me. "How and how did Hoffa help with it?" I glared at him. "I'm going to drop a rock on the island, which is what I wanted to do to Hoffa." "Geez, Bob, here you go again. You're going to perform planetary ecological surgery just because it's convenient." "No, Marvin." I jumped to my feet. "I'm going to do it because those things threaten my family, and you can analyze that all you want. I don't give a damn." I closed down his VR connection and he disappeared, effectively kicked out. Pretty rude, and I'd be apologizing later. But for the moment, I was too steamed to care. I had a far more immediate problem, though. Assuming I was right about the hippogriffs smelling blood, then today's battle would bring yet another wave tomorrow, maybe much larger. It would take time to find a large enough mass to destroy the island. I calculated an initial size of 100 tons would about do it. We had identified a number of nickel-iron asteroids in the system, some of which would be about the right size. I received a ping from Marvin. It was time to eat crow. I invited him in, and we looked at each other warily. He broke the silence first. "You know we're no good with this crap, right?" It was enough. I broke down laughing, and we nodded at each other. "Done. Possibly identical twins could come close to understanding, but certainly no one else." We sat down, and I described my thoughts on the impactor. "Huh," he replied. "So, a couple of months to build Bill's asteroid mover, a couple more weeks to move the asteroid into place. You think the hippogriffs will just wait around?" "I'm open to suggestions. I understand you're angry, Bob, and you want to smash the island to smithereens. But all you need to do is hammer it enough to take out the hippogriff population. You don't need a Yucatan-level event to do that." I nodded. "So, a bunch of small impactors? 1,000-pound steel ball will do a lot of damage." "Oh," I nodded. "Ship busters. Yeah, I've still got 4 in inventory." "The thing is, though, Bob, you don't want too big of a bang. Tsunamis, ground shocks, flying debris could do more damage to the Deltans than a bunch of hippogriffs. Get this wrong, and you could be directly responsible for the extinction of the Deltan species." I nodded, shocked. Time to get my temper under control. We decided to use the shipbusters one at a time and gauge the results after each strike. I sent the first shipbuster in at what I hoped was a reasonably sedate velocity. The results were slightly more, spectacular than expected. In retrospect, maybe I didn't allow for the amount of material that would normally be shed by a meteor on the way down, or I forgot to carry the 2. Whatever the reason, the impact produced a mushroom cloud that would have done a fission bomb proud. As the smoke and dust cleared, it was obvious that the island and the hippogriffs were gone. Well, that was the good news. The bad news was that this was definitely going to produce ground shocks all the way to Camelot, and at least some debris. I flew several drones over to the camp to find everyone already awake, staring at the bright cloud to the southwest. Archimedes looked up at the drone as I arrived.
"Did you do that?"
he said in a hushed voice. I wasn't sure of the expression on his face. Awe, certainly, but I thought maybe a bit of fear. I hope not. That wasn't the legacy I wanted to leave. "Yeah, Archimedes, that's the Hippogriff Island being obliterated." Archimedes' eyes grew wider and his ears went down. He took a half step back from me. "Damn." At that moment, the ground shock arrived. It wasn't the worst earthquake I'd ever seen, but was probably the first in the Deltans' experience. They hugged the ground, and there were many screams. The shaking was brief. It was followed a few minutes later by the sound of the explosion. The crack and roar seemed to go on forever, but couldn't have been a minute in all. The Deltans continued to huddle until it let up. But now came the hard part. I went to the elders. "There may be some burning rocks falling from the sky in about 100 heartbeats or so. You should get everyone into the lee side of the bluff. There were wide eyes and flattened ears, but no one was going to argue with me. In short order, every Delton was huddled behind the central bluff. The debris arrived right on time. Drones hadn't been able to detect anything big. I hoped that would hold, as I wasn't really sure I could intercept incoming debris with a buster, or if it would do any good. The pelting lasted several minutes. It was impressive, and there was some minor damage to the village, but no one was hurt. The Deltons huddled for the rest of the night, unwilling to leave the sanctuary of the rock. When morning finally came, people spread back out to their normal locations. A few of them had to do some cleanup, but their neighbors pitched in. Overall, the amount of actual damage was minor. The council was having yet another session. Again, though, I wasn't expecting a medal. When they were done, they motioned to the drone. I flew it over, and Hoffa stepped forward.
"We understand what you've done. We understand your explanations. But everything you ask, everything you do, seems to come with a larger and larger cost. We're not sure if we're better off now or not. There's a lot of argument about that."
He paused for a moment, a determined look on his face, then faced me squarely.
"We'd like you to go away. We'll face our fate ourselves. If you want to kill us, we can't stop you. If you want to kill me, I can't do anything about it. But you're not welcome here anymore."
I stared at him, through the drone, for what seemed like forever. I was frozen. Numb. It was too much to process. The emotional circuit breaker had tripped. I'd lost a family already. Now I was losing a second one. I backed out of the drone and turned to Marvin. His face was gray. I was sure I didn't look any better.
"I guess I screwed up,"
I said. "Look, let's just clear out for now," he replied. "Give things time to cool off. You can talk to Archimedes later." I nodded and re-entered the drone. I floated over to Archimedes, who was not looking well. Deltons didn't display shock, the same as humans. His facial fur was lying in disorganized mats. But the wide eyes and flat ears were probably universal. A disconnected part of me started theorizing about why that might be, and I squashed it. "Archimedes, I'm going to take off until things cool down. I'll talk to you later." He nodded. I noted that Diana had a look on her face of either satisfaction or triumph. I'd never hated anyone as much as I despised her at that moment. 20. Parasite. Howard. October 2189. Vulcan. Things that make you go, "Ew! This definitely qualified." I couldn't take my eyes off the video as the doctor made an incision on the patient and proceeded to extract a small bundle of eggs. A few had hatched and the larvae were trying to burrow away. At that moment right there, I was so thankful that I was no longer biological. I glanced at Butterworth's video feed and noticed that he was paying an extreme level of attention to his glass of Jameson. Huh, not a bad idea. I invoked a glass of Sam's cognac and turned on my alcohol receptors. A slight buzz was just what the doctor ordered. Finally, thank the universe, the video ended. Butterworth turned to look at the video camera. A slight smile formed when he saw the glass in my hand. I shrugged a "what about it" shrug.
"The parasite appears to be a large insect," he explained. "The bite itches a bit, then disappears. When the eggs have grown enough, though, it becomes a large swollen area. By that point, we have less than a day to remove the eggs."
"What if you don't?" I knew I would regret asking, but I couldn't stop myself.
"The larvae go for the heart, fatal within 2 days or so. Then the larvae feast on the corpse. That appears to be the life cycle. We've lost 4 people and 2 cattle so far. The doctors think they might be able to come up with a blood test, but I can't see poking every colonist every other day to draw blood."
"Wonderful. Have we caught any adults yet?" Butterworth shook his head.
"No. Nor do we have very good descriptions, other than that it's about hummingbird size. We're working on it, but I was hoping you might be able to throw in some surveillance drones.
I'll crank up the autofactory and start pumping them out. I'll also see if I can modify the video and audio pickups to be more sensitive to insect sound and movement. Butterworth nodded to me and signed off. I gave orders to Guppy for the changes to the autofactory schedules, then sat back and shook my head.
Gross!
The Spitz and Faith colonies were done offloading to Romulus. Colonists were staying in temporary quarters until the towns were built. Amy Construction Equipment worked full speed to clear some land and set out street plans. We'd learned from the USE's experience on Vulcan, and we were building a fence right away. The wildlife on Romulus wasn't nearly as big or plentiful, but there was a joke going around about carnivorous rabbits. Everyone was fine with excess caution. The Faith and Spitz colonies were set up on separate continents. The land area on Romulus was divided into 8 land masses, each about the size of Australia, and a number of smaller archipelagos. Separation of nations wouldn't be a problem. The really important item, from my point of view, was that our relatives were now awake. As part of our deal with Cranston, Julia Hendricks and family owned a communicator, so didn't have to schedule time on the colony system. At the appointed hour, I connected to the conference that Riker was advertising. I noted with a chuckle that we were up over 30 bobs subscribing to the feed. I watched as Riker made the call, and Julia came online. A dozen or so random family members jostled for position behind her in the video, and on her lap, with pride of place, was Space Cadet Justin.
"Uncle Will!"
he yelled. "Hey, Cadet, enjoy the spaceship ride." I could hear the pride and joy in Riker's voice. I and every other Bob shared it. These were our sister's descendants, and a major reason why we put up with idiots like Cranston and Vehement. I remembered Milo, who had expressed a strong lack of caring about humanity's fate. A momentary wave of sadness washed over me at his memory. I wondered what he would have thought of the current situation. I pulled myself back to the present, where Julia was talking about their experience. Well, trying to. Justin didn't seem willing to give up the floor.
"And we went in the big ship and we sat and it was boring, and then there was a bump and they took us down a big hallway and they gave me a needle, which I hated, and they made me sleepy and they put me in a box and..."
Amazing. He didn't even seem to be stopping to breathe. The soliloquy went on for another minute while Julia increasingly failed to keep a grin off her face. Finally, having said what he needed to say, he yelled, "Bye, Uncle Weir," and shot out of the frame. This prompted laughter from everyone, family and Bob's both. Julia turned back to Riker with a smile on her face.
"He has 2 speeds, asleep and what you just saw."
One of the family members, who I remembered as Philip something, leaned forward.
"Will, how long until some other colony gets planted on Romulus?" Riker shook his head.
"Can't say. We've got 2 more colony ships heading to your system right now, but the Enclave leaders will decide whether they want to settle on Vulcan or Romulus. Howard tells me that Romulus is looking a lot more attractive these days, though."
There were chuckles from the family. News of the Raptors had already spread. Riker talked to Julia for a few more minutes, fielded some questions from other family members, and got Julia to promise to call him as soon as they were in private residences. Then, it was over. As Riker hung up the call, I sat back to bask in the peculiar mix of joy, wistfulness, and melancholy that seeing our family always left me with. I had talked with a few other Bobs about it. It seemed to be a common reaction. I guess original Bob wasn't as much of a loner as he'd always claimed. I signed off of the conference call and turned to Guppy, who had been hovering.
"What?"
"Colonel Butterworth wants to talk to you. They've caught a parasite adult."
Ugly little bugger.
Hummingbird's size turned out to be a little bit of an exaggeration, but it was still one of the biggest insects I'd ever seen. I didn't much care for insects, and I had an urge to stomp on this one. It looked like some odd combination of hornet and spider with 2 sets of wings. The stinger was particularly nasty looking. Retractable, it could inject eggs in its victim up to an inch deep. I had to turn off my gag reflex watching the necropsy. Well, now we had specifics. I bundled up all the data and shot off an email to Bill asking for suggestions. Then I connected to Butterworth.
Howard, you've seen our new neighbor?
Yeah, not my favorite creature. I've sent something off to Bill, and I've got a couple dozen new drones ready. I'll program them with the data and get them to scan the area, see what we come up with. Butterworth nodded and disconnected. The colonel looked outwardly calm, but I knew this was worrying him. Big things like raptors we could handle. Small stuff? Not so much. Humanity could conceivably end up prisoners in their own homes if we didn't get control of this pest. 21.
Attacks continue. Riker, December 2174, Seoul.
We lost a cargo drone, Charles said, popping into VR. There was an explosive package waiting where it landed. As soon as it touched down, the bomb went off.
He sat down and accepted a coffee from Jeeves.
It was a supply delivery to Vancouver Island. They've still got enough of a fishery that they're not facing immediate starvation, but the loss of equipment and resources is still painful.
I looked up and muttered a few choice expletives. I take it we lost the entire food shipment? Charles nodded.
I thought we had the landing area completely secured. Vehement has already claimed responsibility. They're getting trickier.
A light blinked on my console. Not surprisingly, it was Premier Grady. I accepted the call.
We seem to have lost our delivery, he said without preamble. I saw the announcement. I do not blame you for this. You could just as soon blame me. However, the problem remains of hungry mouths to feed. What can be done?
Short term, sir. I'm going to put together another delivery. Homer is in your area, so he'll arrange a time and place over a short-range laser link. No chance of intercepting the communication that way. I turned to look at Homer. He nodded and disappeared. I thought for a second, then turned back to the video call. Meanwhile, I think that Vehement has graduated to major threat. They're not going to go away, and they're no longer just a nuisance. I talked to Grady for a few more moments, going over some backlogged items. Then he looked to his right and announced that he was receiving the connection from Homer. His eyes moved across the video screen for a few moments. Then he turned back to me and nodded. After he disconnected, Charles said,
"We also have the issue of the Florianopolis attacks."
"I know, Charles. A lot of people still blame Brazil for the war. I guess they're taking out their frustrations and getting some revenge. We have a task force going on that already. I just don't know how hard they're working on it. There seems to be a lot of sympathy for those terrorist attacks.
Less so for the supply chain attacks, even though fewer lives are lost," Charles shrugged. "It's closer to home, I guess."
There had been sabotage on one of the donuts. Some chemicals had been introduced into the irrigation system and had killed 3 sections of Kudzu before the automated systems caught on and shut everything down for inspection. This Vehement group was good. The only people that had legitimate access to the space farms were the Bobs. Since Vehement demonstrably was able to gain access, we had to consider all other means. Ideas for how they might have done it included fake drones controlled by Vehement, stealth devices piggybacking up from Earth on returning delivery vehicles, or even hacking of our legitimate drones. None of those alternatives really seemed realistic, but then that was the thing about being a good hacker. If people saw it coming, you wouldn't be able to get away with it. I set my AIMI monitors to reviewing all traffic for the last month. Even if they found nothing, I was at least eliminating possibilities. I was archiving everything, though, in case I got inspired at some later date. Somewhere in all the communications around Earth, there had to be exchanges between Vehement members. I went back to review, yet again, everything in the libraries about cryptography.
22. Fallout.
Bob, December 2173, Delta Eridani.
Archimedes.
Archimedes stopped in mid-step and looked wildly around.
Bob?
I canceled the camouflage on the drone for a moment so he could locate it. He grunted an acknowledgement and settled carefully to the ground to sit, leaning against a tree. I brought the drone down to eye level, then re-engaged the camouflage.
I don't think you're going to be allowed back.
The statement was delivered in a low voice without looking at the drone.
Since you were banished, there have been no attacks.
That's because I've killed 6 hippogriffs so far that we're heading your way, I replied. I was irritated, and I let it show in my tone. Archimedes looked at the drone, eyes wide.
You're still protecting us?
You're still important to me, Archimedes. Especially you and your family. Speaking of which, how is Buster doing? Archimedes smiled fondly.
He wants to help me make tools now. Of course, all he does is bash rocks together, but it's a start.
He lost the smile and looked down for a moment before continuing.
And getting a lot of what you call cold shoulder, still. Some of the other cubs have started to tease Buster. I don't want you to go away forever, but I can't have my family affected.
I understand, Archimedes. I still need to get you up to speed with the bow and arrow eventually, but it can wait. The thing to remember is that I didn't wipe out the hippogriffs, just the local nest. As a species, they're still out there, and your area is effectively unclaimed territory for them now. You need to be ready to hold them off. At minimum, you need to have a supply of extra spears, and the bows and arrows will give you more range.
Okay. I've been playing around with the short spears, arrows. I told people they're small spears for Buster. They laugh, but they believe me. The bow part. Why does it have to be different materials?
Laminated material is stronger and has much better spring. Eventually, you'll glue it, but for now, tying is good enough. We talked for a while longer, plans for new weapons, suggestions for the medicine woman, basic math. I would bring these people out of the Stone Age one way or another. Eventually, Archimedes got up, said goodbye, and headed back to Camelot. It was enough. It was a good day. Marvin had something to say again, I could always tell. He would open his mouth, then close it, then try again. I wasn't sure if I should be concerned or not. Last time, it had been hippogriffs. Not a good track record. Finally, he managed to squeeze it out. I think I'm going to be heading out soon. I froze for almost half a second. As in, leaving Delta Eridani? Yeah, Bob. You've done a lot with the Deltans, but I think it's past the point where it needs two of us. This is a caretaker situation now. He made a gesture at the video window I'd been watching. Truthfully, the council kicking you out was probably a good thing for them. They go back to deciding their own destiny. You can still tweak things here and there, but the Sky God business really wasn't healthy for you or for them. I thought about being offended, getting mad. But the truth was that I'd been having very similar thoughts. I dropped my eyes and nodded. Still, it won't be the same without you around to give Guppy bad greeting lines. Hell, Bob. With Scut, we're never really out of touch. If I keep my speed below 0.75C, my tau won't go high enough to preclude VR. I might just seem a little groggy to you. Funny, it still doesn't feel the same. I shrugged and paced back and forth a few times in silence. I guess I understand, though, Marv. It's always been my project. Luke and Bender knew that. Sure wish they'd intercept the Scut plan's transmission, Marvin commented, changing the subject. It would be nice to know if they're okay. I nodded and sat down. What a crap year this was turning into. On the other hand, Scut did make things a little easier. There were things to do and Bobs to talk to. I shook my head and sighed. The moping was pointless. I would always be able to find a laundry list of things to be depressed about if I worked at it. The Deltons were still there, even if they weren't talking to me at the moment. 23. Vehement. Riker, September 2175, Seoul. Pieces of space station mingled with desiccated plants and the carcasses of livestock that had been unlucky enough to be living on that donut. The debris had scattered with the explosion, but orbital mechanics and mutual gravity were bringing everything back together. Homer's image floated in the video window.
We just brought this one online. 6 months' work. Gone.
I nodded silently. The donuts were Homer's babies. He'd come up with the idea and head-manned it to completion. This couldn't be easy for him. Any announcements?
Yeah, vehement. Usual crazy-ass rant. Humanity is a cancer, the universe is better off without them, blah, blah.
I'm sorry, buddy. But we'll get them, one way or another. Homer was silent. His expression said everything. Sadness, anger, confusion. He wouldn't meet my eyes. I felt guilty about all the bad thoughts I'd had about him in the past. He was a fully contributing member of the team, and this was killing him. I was concerned about Homer. He had pretty much stopped ribbing me, hadn't called me number two in months. In fact, he seemed to have turned all business. I wondered if someone had offended him, but on the one occasion I'd tried to talk to him about it, he just deflected the conversation. We've got enough redundancy now that this won't leave us dead in the water, I said. But with the reduced planet-side output, it's going to mean short rations, or more kudzu. I smiled, trying to lighten the mood. Homer wasn't having any. He shrugged, then ended the connection. Guppy, what have we got relating to Farm 6?
Querying AMI team. One moment.
After a short delay, Guppy continued.
No related transmissions detected. No nearby activity except by heaven vessels.
Crap. They were covering their tracks too well. Something will break. Something has to. Guppy didn't comment. He wasn't much on encouragement. Huge, fishy eyes blinked once. Just to really make my week, there were several terrorist attacks on Florianopolis as well. I kept wondering if there was some anniversary coming up that was triggering all the activity. The terrorists were getting smarter and hitting more critical targets. One of the attacks had taken out the power system. It would take a couple of days to fix. It wasn't the first time that the actions of Vehement and the Brazilian attacks seemed to be coordinated. I wondered if there was some connection. It was almost certainly two different groups, but maybe they were talking to each other, sharing intelligence. That could actually be of benefit to me. The old Earth, pre-war, had global technology and every form of communications you could imagine. This post-apocalyptic reality was far more limited. There were fewer methods of communication for collusion between the two groups, or even crosstalk between vehement cells. But I'd been monitoring all channels, at least everything I could think of, so either I'd missed some form of communication, or they were using some kind of steganography, which would be almost impossible to recognize unless you knew what you were looking for. Or they had gone low-tech. Option three would be too slow. Number one, I couldn't do anything about, so that left two. Steganography was, by definition, inefficient, since you had to spread the message out enough for it to be unnoticeable. Therefore, the transmission medium would have to allow a high bandwidth, which would immediately rule out a lot of possibilities. And there were statistical methods that could ferret out steganographic messages. I retired to my VR to give this more thought. 24. Visiting Marvin. Bob, March 2174, Delta Eridani. I hadn't had to kill a hippogriff in months. It wasn't clear if they'd learned to avoid the territory or if there simply weren't any left that were close enough to bother the Deltons. Since Marvin's departure, I was handling all the drones myself. I could automate a certain amount of the tasks, but I still eventually had to review the mission recordings. Honestly, I couldn't be bothered. I kept my eye on Archimedes and his family, probably a little more than I should. I had occasional flashes of myself as the overbearing grandparent who kept wanting to visit. It was an embarrassing image, and I resolved to contact Archimedes a little less often. Marvin was long gone, heading for Pi-cubed Orionis. I think he was hoping for an intelligent species that he could be in charge of. It seemed we actually had a paternal streak, or maybe maternal. He was, as promised, keeping his top speed low enough so that he could still interface via Scut connection. We found a balance where he frame jacked up a bit and I slowed my time sense some, and we could then interact at the same time rate. It worked. Today I was visiting Marvin. In Delta Eridani, as Senior Bob, I generally played host. It was interesting that traditions and modes of behavior were developing, even among a bunch of post-human computers. Generally, the Senior Bob in any system was in charge and played host to the other Bobs. It made sense to me, which meant it pretty much made sense to all the Bobs. Marvin apparently had a bit of a luxury streak in him. His VR environment was an open-air patio and rancher-style house at the top of a low mountain in a semi-tropical climate. The ocean stretched out in all directions, right out to the horizon. It was a beautiful, if somewhat mundane, scene, except for a couple of anomalies. The very close horizon, the low gravity, and the presence of Earth hanging in the middle of the sky. You know there's no air on the moon, right? I grinned at him. Marvin shrugged. I'm going through all the science fiction books I've read over the years and replicating the environments for a while. It's interesting, and it's good practice at VR programming. I nodded. It wasn't really important. We were stalling, and we both knew it. Finally, I brought up the elephant in the room. My two newest clones, Pete and Victor, are almost ready to leave. Victor is willing to follow the trail of either Luke or Bender. Pete is not interested at all. We have to make a choice. Marvin took a moment to brush his hand through his hair. I remembered that habit from when I was original Bob. Apparently death wasn't enough to remove nervous tics. I guess Pete is adamant, he asked. Yep. Like Milo with Earth. This is the expression of not caring. He's going off in whatever direction he decides on, and that's that. Marvin chuckled. A recurring theme. Great. Well, it's a coin toss then, isn't it? The thing is, Marv, what if something bad happened to both Luke and Bender? They were heading for different stars, but in the same general direction. What if they ran into something? What, like the Borg? It just seems unlikely, Bob. What would be the motive? Don't know. Maybe another Medeiros? We don't really have any information. I shrugged, conceding the point. Well, we'll leave it up to Victor. He'll transmit constantly over Scut, so we'll know if something happens to him. Marvin nodded, a worried look on his face. 25. Rabbits. Howard, November 2189, Vulcan. There was a call on my queue from one of the biologists. I was a little surprised. Normally, I talked only to Butterworth. Not that there was a rule or anything, still. Curious. I dialed the call. Sheehy. A woman appeared on screen for a moment, then disappeared off frame. I got an impression of thick red hair tied into a ponytail. Dr. Sheehy, this is Howard Johansson returning your call. Her disembodied voice drifted back to the phone.
Oh, thanks for getting back to me. Colonel Butterworth wanted me to call you if we had news. We have news.
I waited for a moment. And? She returned and grinned into the video.
Sorry, I love the drama. Anyway, we have a possible treatment for Divine.
Which is? Honestly, Sheehy, keep this up and I'll drop a rock on you.
Bunnies.
I'm going to drop a rock on you. Dr. Sheehy laughed. I couldn't help noticing that she had a great laugh. Also, freckles, dimples when she laughed. I mentally slapped myself. This could go exactly nowhere. She disappeared again, then returned holding a small section of plant.
Turns out rabbits not only are able to eat the vine, they seem to be attracted to it. I think the toxin is just added flavoring to them. Bad for the vine, good for us.
Right, but we still have to expend a lot of effort to harvest the vine and get it to the rabbits. Could just as easily incinerate it.
No, no.
Dr. Sheehy shook her head.
Rabbits are self-replicating. Aggressively so. You may have heard.
She grinned at me.
And they make great stew.
I smiled back at her. There was a certain poetry in the solution. Granted, we'd be unleashing a Terran scourge, even if a fluffy one, on an unsuspecting planet, but Vulcan attacked first. Have you asked Butterworth about it?
He says Council will have to approve, but they're feeling a little humble these days. He thinks he can ram it through.
Well, all righty then. Dr. Sheehy paused for a moment before continuing.
You heard about the Bronto attack yesterday?
Well, attack is not the right word. They tried to eat the fence again.
Yes, and we had to kill one that had figured out that he could just avoid the electrical wires. That's one smart Bronto. IQ up in the 2, maybe 3 range.
Dr. Sheehy smiled at her own joke.
Anyway, before they airlifted the carcass away from the clearing, someone got the bright idea to cut off a big hunk of meat. It passed toxicology tests, and it passed the barbecue test, so now Bronto is on the menu. You may find your kudzu sales dropping.
Whoa! You were not supposed to be hunting for sustenance until the impact studies are completed. Is the council good with this? Dr. Sheehy gave me an unbelieving look.
Try to picture the council telling 20,000 people that they have to eat kudzu instead of steak when steak is lumbering around in plain view every day. Can you say lynching?
Yeah, okay. Point taken. Well, I still have the Romulan colony market. They don't have Bronto. Dr. Sheehy grinned and shrugged, then disconnected. To be honest, this was good news from my point of view. The more the colonies could do themselves, the less I had to do. I could even conceivably take off in a decade or so. And on that subject, the Guppy-controlled surveillance system wasn't going to build itself. Back to work. 26. Selling Poseidon. Riker, December 2175, Sol.
You seem incapable of preventing them from striking at will.
Ambassador Gerald seemed to be enjoying the situation, which made his attempts at portraying anger unconvincing. I'd ignored his jibes in the past, but I was getting tired of it. And what have you been able to do, Ambassador? Found the source of those hacking attempts yet? Made any arrests? Got any suggestions? Anything besides endless carping? I exchanged glares with the ambassador for a moment, then moved on. We're working on replacing the donut, but it'll still be a few months, plus whatever time it takes to get the farm regrown. There will be short rations for a while, but no starvation. I had a sudden inspiration, one of those mid-action moments, and added, Vehement got lucky this time. We stopped most of their attempts before they get anywhere. They aren't really that smart. It wasn't true, but baiting them might force some kind of reaction. Vehement depended on fear, and being publicly dissed might provoke a response. Before anyone could comment, I turned off my audio, effectively giving up the floor. I turned to Guppy without moving my avatar. Put everything we have on communications monitoring. I want to know who reacts to my words and how. I want every byte accounted for. Guppy nodded and went into command fugue. The session moved on to the emigration question. The Maldives and Micronesia had pretty much cemented their claim on Poseidon, partly due to lack of interest by the other enclaves. They needed about 600 more people from other enclaves to form a full colony ship complement, but they were having a hard time making that. No one wanted to split off from their group, especially to go to a planet so, specialized. It was attractive to islanders, to everyone else, not so much. At the same time, other groups were trying to lay claim to the semi-completed ships for emigration to Vulcan or Romulus. The whole thing was acrimonious and mostly information-free.
No detectable increase in Earthside traffic. One anomalous communication to Spaceside.
Okay, that was something. Source? Destination?
Source, New Zealand. Although not near any population centers. Destination, Homer.
Excuse me?
It was a tight beam signal. It would not have been detectable except for a chance alignment with one of our drones on cleanup duty.
Oh. Shit. That just did not make sense. Why would Homer be helping them? Why would he be sabotaging his own project? Unless he didn't have a choice. Suddenly Homer's change in personality took on an ominous cast. It was very un-Homer-like. The complete cessation of jokes. The withdrawal from the rest of us. Perhaps because it wasn't Homer. I sent a message to Charles requesting a physical meetup. 27. Luke returns. Bob. March 2178, Delta Eridani. I walked through the village VR, watching the activity. There had been improvements in the 6 years since I'd been kicked out. I had enough hidden cameras and camouflaged drones around the village now to feed a real-time VR, no more recorded scenes. Archimedes had finally started taking my tent design seriously. A few other couples copied the result, and now there were a half dozen pretty good facsimiles of teepees scattered through the village. It was the dry season, but once the rain started up again, I expected this innovation to increase in popularity. I was trying to ignore a couple engaging in some very public displays of affection when I received a ping. From Luke! I responded, and he popped in. Hey, Bob, long time. I grinned and slapped him on the shoulder. Luke! Good to see you, buddy. Luke appeared momentarily surprised. We've never been physically demonstrative like that. In fact, original Bob was a little standoffish in terms of physical contact. Luke got over it quickly, though, and grinned back at me. I just went through the whole surprise visit by Bill thing. Apparently, it's a standard hazing ritual. I laughed. Oh, yes, I went through it, too. You don't expect a VR link across light years, and I noticed that Bill's transmitted plans still don't mention the possibility. So where are you right now? Kappa Seti. And before you say it, Bill already gave me crap about not picking up his transmissions right away. Luke materialized a coffee, waited while Spike sniffed his hand, and then turned back to me. I've spent the last several minutes reading blogs. Lots has been happening, apparently. I nodded, knowing he would have caught up on events with the Deltans first thing. What have you found out your way? A super Earth, Luke shrugged. Absolutely not suitable for colonization. Gravity just over 3G, but a full-on ecosystem. I've been having fun cataloging things, and I've started another load of Bobs. Luke stopped talking as Archimedes came into the VR area, his son trailing him. Buster was almost as tall as his father, and not showing any sign of slowing down. Archimedes had filled out as he reached full adulthood and wasn't looking at all bookish anymore. The two of them together made a formidable team. They were carrying bows and had quivers on their backs. Each was carrying some kind of small game, sort of a wild turkey analog, freshly killed. Luke turned to me.
Bows and arrows?
Wow, dude, moving things right along. I waved a hand in dismissal. Sooner or later, the hippogriffs will find them again. I want them to be ready. Luke nodded and materialized a lazy boy. Good to be back. This looks like fun. Where's Marvin? He took off a few years ago, right after I got kicked out of Camelot. He keeps in touch, though. Cool. I'll look him up when I have a moment. Heard from Bender? I shook my head. No, and I have no idea why. One of my clones has followed his flight plan and should be able to report something in a year or two. Luke nodded. I materialized the couch and coffee table set up and got comfortable. There's always time to get caught up with old friends. 28. Et tu, Homer. Riker, December 2175, Sol. There was seldom any reason for the Bobs to meet physically these days. Scut and VR meant we could do everything we needed to in virtual space. Scut-equipped drones made distance irrelevant for remote administration as well. Now, two Heaven vessels floated less than 50 meters apart in a section of space not far enough from a Lagrange point to look suspicious, but not so close that nearby clutter might disguise an eavesdropper. A laser link ensured that communications would be leakage-free and interception-free. Charles sat across from me, the coffee in his hand forgotten, his expression a mix of confusion, disbelief, and horror. I hastened to explain. This is just speculation on my part, or it started out that way anyway. When I went over the recent instances of vehement space-side sabotage, Homer was always a recent visitor. In a couple of cases, the only recent visitor. We'd been saying that nothing had been near the locations, but that's because we'd been discounting ourselves as suspects.
But Homer? How?
You remember the hacking attempt on me? I thought that was the only instance, but maybe it was the only instance that we detected. Vehement obviously has some heavy-duty tech on their side. Maybe they discovered another way in.
So, what do we do?
I looked down for a moment. This wasn't going to be easy to say.
We have to disable Homer and check him out. We can apologize afterwards if I'm wrong.
Remember the Battle of Sol?
Investigation complete. File uploaded.
Thanks, Guppy. I'll look at it when I have a chance. The file would be a summary of whatever the drones had found at the ground location of that suspicious transmission. I'd made a point of disabling all radio comms on those drones and using secret key encryption and frequency jumping for the Scut telemetry. I couldn't have intercepted and decoded that kind of setup if I'd been handed the information on a silver platter. I had to assume that the unknown opponent wasn't too much smarter than me, or I might as well just roll over and expose my throat. I sent Homer a message that I thought I knew where the next attack by Vehement would be, and that we needed a secure discussion. Charles, Homer, and I arranged to meet just to orbital north of the Earth-Moon L4 point. Homer coasted up and applied the brakes. Once we were at station keeping, we rotated to present our laser comms to each other. In an abundance of paranoia, I routed my communications through Sandbox Bob. Laser comms were intimate enough that if Homer had a virus, it might try to get to me via that connection. I told Charles to do the same. We connected up and Homer appeared in my VR.
So, Riker, what's this big discovery?
I took a sip of my coffee and privately looked over at Sandbox Bob. No reaction. Just waiting for Charles. I don't want to have to repeat myself and answer the same arguments twice. One of us can fill in Ralph later when he gets here. I looked up at the holotank where Charles was just coming up on our group. Charles linked up by laser comms and popped into the common VR. Hi, guys, sup? In my private VR, Sandbox Bob grabbed his throat and fell over. I looked at Guppy, one eyebrow raised.
Source of attack is Homer.
I raised both hands in the air in the common VR, and Charles put a steel ball right through Homer's reactor control system. Homer went dead as he lost all power, just as he had back in our battle with the Brazilian probes.
I did a quick scan. Perfect shot. No collateral damage.
Charles looked green, and I'm sure I did as well. We sent over a squad of roamers and unceremoniously cut into Homer's cargo bay. It took a few hours before we had Homer's matrix up on a test cradle. Now came the dirty part. Here it is. I pointed to the listing. It looks like the laser comms were the source of infection. I'm not sure when or how they would have gotten access, but in any case, it was brilliant. A hole in our defenses that I hadn't even considered. Charles nodded.
Listen, Homer might not be the only one. You could be infected, although that seems unlikely given that you're the one exposing the issue. Or I could be.
My Guppy saw the penetration attempt from Homer as well, so unless you're pulling some kind of double-reverse Maxwell smart thing, I think you're legit. I need you to do an inspection of my matrix to clear up any suspicions about me. Like they did in The Thing. He looked at me expectantly. I thought for a moment and nodded. It was a good idea and necessary. Charles would have to open his hangar doors, then shut down, but now that I knew what to look for, the actual check would take only minutes. I explained the requirements, and Charles did as instructed. A couple of roamers entered Charles's hull, and 20 minutes later, Charles was back up and running. "Thanks, Charles. I can reciprocate if there's any lingering doubt in your mind." He shook his head. "You could have infected me while I was off. Absolutely no reason for you not to." "I'm good." We turned our attention back to Homer. It took 30 hours overall to clean up and repair him. The virus, or Trojan, or whatever you wanted to call it, had gotten its hooks into multiple systems. Homer would have had very little free will, but would be fully conscious. I shuddered, thinking what that must have been like. Ralph showed up in the midst of the process, and we had to explain the whole thing to him. While I was talking, Charles lined up with Ralph's reactor control system. When we pointed this out and explained the alternatives, Ralph quite rationally agreed to an inspection. Once Ralph was back up, clean, thankfully, we turned back to Homer. I removed the viral control and I installed a freshly made firewall over the laser comms. None of us would be susceptible to that particular attack in the future. I also forwarded a complete report to Bill for him to add to the standard releases. Homer booted up. His avatar appeared in the common VR, looked surprised, then collapsed, screaming. The rest of us looked at each other in horror. Had I done something wrong? Had I damaged Homer? "Homer, buddy, come back. You okay?" I knelt beside him and put my hand on his shoulder. The screaming stopped, and he began to moan. He curled into a fetal position, squeezed his eyes shut, and rocked back and forth on the floor. I was at a complete loss. Original Bob hadn't been much for this kind of emotional contact, and I was self-aware enough to know that I was even more standoffish than he was. Ralph and Charles didn't look any more prepared. However, Homer didn't seem to be getting worse or harming himself, so we decided, in timeless male fashion, to leave things be and wait for him to get a grip. After a few more milliseconds, Homer gasped and opened his eyes.
"I was hag-ridden. The bastards had total control of me. They made me lie to you. They made me blow things up. They made me kill people."
Homer began to cry, a hopeless moaning alternating with racking sobs.
"I couldn't do anything. I could only watch myself follow their orders. I couldn't tell you. I couldn't stop myself. I couldn't even kill myself."
Bill popped into VR. "I've been lurking since I got your report. This is unforgivable. I know we don't like violence, but if you feel the need to end the bastards that did this, no one will say boo." He sat on the floor beside Homer and put a hand on his back, simply maintaining human contact. I looked at Charles and Ralph. The expression on their faces said all that was needed. Someone was going to pay. Homer had come out of his funk, but he was still very fragile. Bill was gone after promising any help we might want in building anything we might need, up to and including things that explode. Yep, angry. Charles kept an eye on Homer while Ralph oversaw the construction of the replacement donut. Homer was gradually able to unwind himself and sit, but he would go into panic attacks from time to time. I suggested we enable his endocrine controls, but he shook his head emphatically.
"It feels too much like what they did to me. It's a leash. It's just a different leash."
He waved a hand helplessly, trying to find words.
"It feels like claustrophobia or something. Just the idea of something controlling me makes me want to run around the room screaming."
"Okay, Homer, whatever you feel best about." Charles put a hand on his shoulder. "We're here for you, whatever you need." Homer nodded to us and tried to smile, but it wasn't very reassuring. I had not attended the latest UN session. If Vehement had noticed that they'd lost their puppet, I didn't want to give them any more information. Let them think we'd all destroyed each other. Meanwhile, I looked over Guppy's report. The tight beam signal had come from what originally might have been a small military outpost high in the backcountry of New Zealand. It had some pretty hefty communications capability, judging from the visible hardware. Per my orders, the drones avoided using SUDAR scanning, as that would have been detectable.
Instead, we stuck to passive surveillance techniques, visual and infrared pinpointed occupied areas, and gave an approximate headcount. Audio snooping picked up some of the conversations, the contents of which left no doubt about who was in residence. This appeared to be Vehement Central. Even if they operated on a cell structure, without their tech central, they wouldn't be good for much in the future. I remembered the early hacking attempt, which had also originated from New Zealand. It was reasonable to assume that this had been an ongoing war for longer than I'd realized. Fine. War declared. But I wanted to be certain I caught the right people. The mastermind behind so complex a setup wouldn't be that easy to track down. I was sure there'd be at least one more hop to his location. I would take whatever amount of time, use whatever resources I needed to catch him, without limit. And when I did, there would be a reckoning. 29. Emergency. Howard, April 2190, Vulcan.
Emergency at landing.
I turned briefly to look at Guppy, but good news or bad, Guppy looked like Admiral Akbar, no help there. I turned back to my video call with Dr. Sheehy and said, gotta go, and disconnected. I picked up the video connection that Guppy was holding for me. It was Stefan.
Howard, we've got a group of raptors that somehow got through the fence. They're running through town looking for prey.
Last known location? Stefan gave me a cross street. I knew that security would be converging on the location, but the raptors could move fast, much faster than a human. I had only two busters close enough to be useful, but I had all the drones that were part of the automated surveillance system. As well, several backup units were parked on top of the administration building, sitting in their cradles. I activated the backups and sent all units to the reported location. Halfway there, the two busters blew past the flock of drones, doing close to Mach 1. I was now juggling 18 separate units. Even with most of them slaved to a primary, it was hard to keep track. I dismissed my VR and frame-jacked up high enough so that I could multitask. The busters were coming up on the reported location, but I couldn't see any raptors.
I split off a couple of drones and sent them up to a kilometer altitude, activating high-res, infrared, and motion detection sensors.
Security personnel were approaching from several directions. There were only two streets that the raptors could be on, and there was no sign of them. Could Brogier have been wrong? A quick check of the video surveillance streams eliminated that possibility. Either raptors could become invisible, wouldn't that be a kicker, or they'd found somewhere to hide. I brought all the drones down to a few feet above ground and started a search pattern for raptor prints. The drones took off in different directions, following anything that was even remotely print-like. Shivvying all these units was really wearing on me, even in frame jack. I had to keep track of what orders each unit was following. So I guess I don't feel too bad that it took me a couple of missed cycles before I realized one of the units wasn't responding. I pulled up the video log for that unit and, wow, that's what the inside of a raptor mouth looks like. Good to know. The raptor pack had gone to ground inside someone's storage shed. I guess one of them decided he should take out the flying thing before it raised the alarm. Even acknowledging that they couldn't know about radio, that was intelligent behavior. Bill and I would be discussing this one. Meanwhile, I sent all units to surround the shed, dropped my frame rate to real time, and called Stefan. The drones and busters arrived and took up positions around the shed, and the moment they did that, the raptors made a break for freedom. They dodged through the circle of drones, leaped a fence, and made a beeline for the perimeter. It would be a coin toss whether any of the security people could get into position to take them out, and at the speed the raptors were moving, there wouldn't be much opportunity. Hopefully civilians would have heard the alert and had enough sense to stay indoors. Stefan, have they killed anyone?
Not to my knowledge, but we'll be checking out this out. No, never mind. I see some faces looking out the window. Someone just gave me a thumbs up, so no, no casualties.
Okay, they're out of range of you guys now. I don't have enough space to get my busters up to speed anyway, so I'm going to let them go. Maybe they'll spread the word.
Tabernacle, you think they can talk?
Probably not, but maybe they can teach caution through their behavior. Oh, and guess what? Seems raptors can dig, too. Wonderful.
I looked down at the hole through which the raptors were wriggling. It must have been 7 or 8 feet deep at the low point. Looked like we would be upgrading the fences. Again.
Things just get more and more complicated.
Colonel Butterworth had his head propped up in one hand, elbow in his desk.